Greenhouse Gaslighting, Audie and Eddie set up to record a special for May the 4th. It is fandom full of controversial takes and many discussions that exist for no reason. They decide, once again, to come back on the pod to have this faded discussion. Time will tell if this was indeed a fruitful endeavor.
I'm just starting each fucking podcast with this episode brought to you by Squarespace.
I love Squarespace for my website that nobody uses.
That nobody uses. Website.
Yeah. It's always products and you're just like, I don't know about that. You're telling me Kristen Bell and her husband buy all their underwears from MeUndies and they don't have like better underwear brands being Hollywood elite? Makes sense.
You should really tell me that Kristen Bell and her husband are over here wearing the same matching like Bowser Jr. fucking like boxers, really, bro? Really?
Yep, and they cook HelloFresh, which
That's depressing. That's depressing.
I know. Oh, I don't listen to them often, but every time that I just feel like all their ads are very forced. Which I'm sure is how most influencers, you got to sell out.
Well, speaking of forced ads, have you heard of The Empire coming to a galaxy near you?
I don't fucking get it. Oh, yes, I can't wait. Sounds awesome.
All right, folks. Well, this is our first Star Wars special. We're recording this ahead of time. Hopefully, it's up and running by May 4th. Which, funny enough, it's me and my girlfriend's anniversary, so it has two places of significance in my heart. But, you know, if it's not up by May 4th, something terrible has happened, dear listener. I'm sorry about that. All right. I'm here with my friend Eddie, who I like to talk to time to time about nerd shit.
Hello there. Are we doing this whole podcast in a Jar Jar voice, or I don't know where we left on that point.
Whatever impression comes to mind, do you must.
Okay, Adi. Super high-pitched the entire time.
Good. Let the shitposting flow through you.
Let's do it up.
Well, I'm glad you came with the topic of Star Wars, because first of all, I didn't know what to do for an episode for a minute. But I think it's one of those things that was a mainstay of the online culture, at least for the past like 4 years, right? With the Disney making the new trilogy, and with it being this kind of thing that was like almost permanent. Like, it was only the original trilogy. Then like the Lucas like sequels were this kind of like accidental one-off. And then everyone was like, okay, it ends there. That's it.
Yeah. Pre Disney. There was no discussion. It was, hey, I like this trilogy or both. And now it is a lot more complex where everybody kind of has takes on every bit of the saga or the franchise, and there's so many different conversations going on now. And before that, it was just, hey, do you like the prequels?
Yeah,
I really like the prequels.
Or it wasn't even that much. It was more of like, hey, do you like Star Wars? Yes, I've seen it. No, I've never seen it before, and I have no interest. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And now everyone's got to have a take for every fucking like aspect of it.
Yeah.
So that's how dystopian Star Wars has gotten for me.
Yeah. So in my recent experience of like dating, I have some Star Wars items on display in my house. And whenever a girl comes over the first time, I see the eyes wide and they're like, I just need to let you know that I've never seen Star Wars. And they're like worried about like your reaction to that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then like, you can tell that they're waiting for more to come. And that's like, oh, well, yeah, I enjoy Star Wars. Do you want to watch it? Like, why are you
begs the question, like, how many, like, dudes are more obnoxious than me and you are just like, if you haven't seen the original trilogy, we can't be friends. And it's just like...
Yeah, you can see a a little shock on their face. They're like, is this guy about to yell at me or something? Or, I don't know. You can just tell that there's some kind of toxic story behind it. Every single girl I've ever had back at my place, that's the first thing they say, because I have the Rogue One poster like right in my living room. They're like, I'm going to stop you now. This might be a red flag. You may have some nasty things to say to me, but I've never seen Star Wars. I'm like, oh, but if you want to watch it, we can watch it. They're like, no, not right now. I think it's one of those things you have to work into, watching Star Wars with someone, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost like Star Wars is not like a series of films that you can pop into at any time. It's like this, I mean, it's the closest thing we have to a religion in this country, I guess. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, me and you have definitely had a couple conversations about watch order for new viewers, because I know I've dated people, and you've done this with your significant other, of where do you start and how do you explain to them the different things. And it's like,
well,
I find myself where I start talking and I stop over and over again, because I like want to like, I'm like, oh, maybe I should start with this, talking about this first or that first. And
well, before you even get to other people, like how did Star Wars start for you? Because every like Star Wars fan has that story of who got them into it.
So I think that it was my grandmother, actually, and I can picture now her display case of VHSs, and not a single one of them was I interested in, except this just magnificent box set of the original trilogy, and it was like this gold color to it and stuff. And
oh, yeah.
For some reason, that was the only thing my grandparents were into that I was into, so like... that was the only movie I ever wanted to watch, because I'm like, well, this is what they like it. I like it. This is the only thing that we share interest in. So,
and how old of the version was it? Was it the one with like the creepy 3D animated Jabba, or like, was that scene not in it at that cut yet? Do you know?
I have a hard time remembering that. I know it's so confusing trying to keep track of the original series and like the edits, but I would guess that it had to be pre-99. I think that he added all those special effects around the time he did episode one, but I'm not sure. So they brainwashed us out of remembering what the original series was like.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Because like my relationship goes back far enough to like having older relatives. Like, that, just not just, like, older cousins, but also, like, older relatives who, like... And even though, like, it was an immigrant community, the fact that they're still, like, oh, but Star Wars is very nice. Like, that's just how integral to the American experience it is. So I always... They saw their, like, Star Wars posters. I remember them being really mad about The Phantom Menace and not knowing what the fuck The Phantom Menace was. And that's the thing. I only fully watched The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones like this year or last year, probably in the pandemic. Like I knew about what happened in the Attack of the Clones, but never really fully saw it. And Phantom Menace was, now I get it. I really get it. But it started like with just knowing that Star Wars is this thing. And then eventually like, one of my dad's friends like lent him the VHS copies. This is back when like, you know, DVD was still popular, but VHS, like it was still not that uncommon to, you know, still have a VHS player and stuff. So we just like, it was literally like me and my dad just like watch the movies. We didn't do much as like a father son duo, right? Except like this. So that's like one of the more integral memories I had with him. And yeah. Oh, I'm making it sound really bad. No, it's not like that.
No, I mean, I definitely get what you're talking about, because it was one of the few points, especially as a kid, that like I had this connection with my father, because
yeah,
he was the manly man who's always in the garage working on stuff. So like
yeah, it's that kind of American masculinity where it's like it's not like your dad's absent from your life, but it's just he's the breadwinner, he's the masculine figure in the family. Yeah. He doesn't need to be like the, come on, sport, let's go fishing type of dad of the 60s. He's there doing his job. And yeah, he enjoys this movie with you.
Right, yep. You can go out to the garage and work on stuff with him, but you're a child and you don't care too much about that. But when he's done and he comes in, it's time to watch Star Wars.
Right,
and
right.
That's a really special moment for you. So I get that.
Yeah, and then I think at that point, so we saw the original trilogy, and then my dad, I think because it was PG-13 when it came out, they had the DVD for Revenge of the Sith, but never like bothered to watch it until after the fact. So my first jump into the prequel trilogy was Revenge of the Sith, and it was really the only prequel film that I had seen for a while. Yeah, probably until like I knew what happened in Attack of the Clones, and I watched the Clone Wars animated series, both of them actually, at different points in my life. But that was the only film I ever saw, and to be fair, it still holds up. Revenge of the Sith, even though it's like probably one of the corniest movies ever made, it holds up to this day. I truly do believe that.
No, I believe that too. It's they try a lot of things. Some things don't land, but just
Sidious is all you need.
Sidious is all you need, and they're able to like just shift how this entire like super dense universe is in such a quick amount of time, but it still makes sense, and it's still like Order 66 is one of my favorite scenes in any movie because it's just.
I should clarify though, it made no sense to me the first time I saw it. So in hindsight,
oh, I'm sure it made no sense to me because I didn't see a lot of movies in the theater as a kid, but I did see Revenge of the Sith as a kid.
So you had the theatrical experience.
I had the theatrical experience. I remember my family always had to sit as close to the screen as possible.
Oh, okay.
So it was, I'm sure, very painful. And yeah, I remember the spaceships were cool. And
yeah.
You wanted to buy all the toys. You just see the spaceship for the first time. You're like, I want that.
Oh yeah, because like those little like what are the Eta Actus II fighters? I read those Star Wars wiki too many times as a kid. Those like almost like precursors to the TIE fighters that Obi-Wan and Anakin come in the first time. I remember just being like obsessed and wanting the Lego set. Never happened, and that's probably one of the coolest designs. Like the new Disney films could have done better than what they were working with in Revenge of the Sith, and they still couldn't.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's reasons why Disney did what they did, but I really enjoyed the prequel series' ability to show the progression of technology. Like the ARC-170 Republic fighters that the clones had, you can tell how that was evolving to the X-Wing and stuff. But in the newer series, they wanted something more familiar, so... Because I remember when the trailer first dropped for the first Disney movie, my grandma's like, oh, another Star Wars movie? And I'm like, well, did you like the prequels that came out in the early 2000s? She's like, never heard of them. Like, she's never heard of them. She's like, Han Solo. She's seen Han Solo, and she's like, okay, Han Solo, Millennium Falcon, I know what's going on here.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I think he tried to do a lot of very radical things in the prequels, and that older fan base I didn't really connect with, but I feel like the younger generation like really loves the prequel series, and I think that
I think partly... it is the frame of reference you have for it, right? Because those old school Star Wars movies are mostly practical effects.
Yeah.
And then that aesthetic, because the whole thing about Star Wars as a franchise, the way this $1 billion product makes its money is by trying to have the same aesthetic in every iteration, regardless of whether or not all of them are good. They all have the same aesthetic, ostensibly speaking, whether it's animated or whether it's a film. And there's something eerie or impressive, depending on your perspective, about how they took this like realm of mostly practical effects and like compromises of editing and the limitations of the technology they had with special effects at the time into like something more fully CGI in the prequels. But you still had like George Lucas as like the visionary at the helm of the project. So it's still like you can see how one leads to the other. And yet, because you're doing something that happens in the past in that universe, in the future, our world, it has that there's a jarring effect that happens, especially if you're an older fan of the series, because you've seen the technology jump in real time and you think this is supposed to be, I mean, it's a different experience if you're keeping up with the movie as a regular viewer and not as like an invested lore head, you know what I mean? And that's something that I think is characteristic of a lot of fandoms, or like people within fandoms, is there's the people who are just along for the ride and enjoying like the experience of the product, which I think is what the public tends to view as the more normal person. And then there's the guys like you and me who are like, we'll read all the different articles. We'll like try to know the lore. We'll know how far back the shit goes, and like we'll watch all the extended content. And I think you become defensive in different ways based on how you engage the material, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think with Star Wars, because there's such a diversity at this point in content, that it really sets people up to view it in very different ways. And I'm sure there's, you know, there's a population that they grew up with maybe just something super random, like the TV show, like the Clone Wars or something like that. And there's just so many different projects that you might have been like attached to early on that really forms how you feel this universe should feel to you, and how everything is connected, I guess.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things where I think different people just interpret Star Wars entirely differently. You know what I mean? And yeah. There's that... some people really identify with the Jedi. Some people really identify with like the different resistance fighters. And it's all like a little bit of everything. And if you look back at like what inspired the films, right? Like samurai films, some like Buddhist like folklore, or at least like the idea of like Buddhist teaching. And I think like even a couple like World War II, like aviation films, like fighter jets shit. That's like what pulled in to make the original trilogy, if you've seen like those reference materials. But it's crazy that this science fiction behemoth is all things to all people. And I think that's why, like, for me, I really don't think Disney should have made the sequel trilogy in the first place. It's just one of those things that's too big.
Yeah, no, I agree with that to an extent. There's just so much content out there that already was existing that, you know, the further you dig into it, it changes the way you view other parts of the content. That like the Clone Wars cartoon series, right? It really digs into why the Jedi aren't good people so much, and then that kind of changes how you view all this other content. And so the more content you put in the Star Wars universe, it has the ability to destroy how you view other content, even if it's not necessarily the intention, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the Mandalorian is a bit of a contradiction in like response to everything that's happened, because it is in some way you could view it as an extension of like Dave Filoni's project with the Clone Wars and with Rebels, and this is like a way for him to like keep his interpretation of events relevant while having like a Disney Plus show. And I was really skeptical of it when it came out, and the initial impression I had of it is that this is for the real Star Wars heads. And yet I think what it does successfully is it manages to still be all things to all people. And I guess that's probably the magic of Star Wars, if you can put it bluntly, is like it can somehow manage to be all things to all people while being a very specific aesthetic.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. There's, yeah, Filioni, I think, helped really pack in there a lot of more, a lot of deeper content kind of in the background. But for people that aren't as familiar with the universe, it's not distracting for them or something where they feel like they're lost. Like having all of his other characters from the other series in there just kind of randomly appearing. When I've watched The Mandalorian with people that, you know, that's kind of maybe the only Star Wars content they've seen, they don't stop and be like, hey, am I missing something? But me and you text each other immediately. We're like, oh, that's really cool. And just sitting in the room with someone watching that episode, the tone is completely different for you compared to that other viewer who's just a Mandalorian fan.
Yeah, yeah. And I,
because you have all these other implications sitting there talking to Bo-Katan, and you know that there's a lot of other events that have happened, and she's feeling a lot of different emotions because you watch these other projects. But a Mandalorian fan can just kind of blissfully sit there and enjoy the cool body armor that she has.
Right.
She has cool body armor.
Because it's like, it's
really, she's really neat.
Yeah, and I guess that's where it works, is it's like this new character pops in, and it's like, oh, they're like the Mandalorian, but they're different. But then for us, it's like we get that little self-confidence boost of being like, oh my god, we've known this character through two other things, and then you see them here, and you kind of wild out. And it's one of those things that I'm like jaded, and yet I want to encourage people to earnestly enjoy things, right? Because on the one hand, like, you have to be really, they're trying to like make it seem like you should deeply reward only the people who get really invested, who engage in all the content, buy all the merch, whatever. And then at the same time, like, while that is the cynical way to look at some of these big pop culture stand pieces, they're fun to watch. And I don't think you can really get mad at, you know, the people who engage in nerd culture as a whole. I mean, you can definitely say that there's the problematic aspects of it. You can definitely say that it's this big commercial enterprise that's like jacking up a lot of money and is kind of exploitative of its fan bases. And yet it's kind of the only release valve people have in the world these days. And Star Wars is that thing to a lot of people. So I want to unironically enjoy The Mandalorian. I really did think it was like, it was entertaining and complete in its own right. And yet there's that part of me that's like, this is another Disney cash grab. This is another just like cynical thing that they get to do, you know, to like jack up into intellectual property, buy up monopolies in media space, and exercise cruel copyright restrictions, all of that shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely something that was in my mind, is Disney is definitely aware of these characters that Filioni created that have a really strong connection to the fan base. You know, I'm sure there's all kinds of Ahsoka merch and stuff that people have been trying to get their hands on for so long. And I don't want them to manipulate her story, which I felt was like a very full and, you know, compelling story, just to like keep her in the universe longer than she really needs to be.
Right, right. Yeah, because then like, it's at the point where you have this very compelling storytelling that's rewarding to watch in its own right, and it's probably rewarding for the creators to do in some sense, and yet it's subject to like these market forces of profitability. And then it just begs you to consider, like, can I really wholesomely enjoy this? Because do you remember that little controversy that happened when there was allegedly a fight between the Disney CEO, Bob Iger, and the Mandalorian creative team, where he wanted to just, like, sell all the merch for Baby Yoda as soon as it came out? And they were like, come on, can you at least, like, wait until a few episodes in so that people can enjoy it? Because that's the plot line of The Mandalorian, is like this, you know, morally gray character has to protect a child, and that's an inherently problematic but also interesting place to tell a story from. And yet, Baby Yoda is insanely profitable for merch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a problematic area to kind of paint themselves in a corner. And that's where I find myself now, is so skeptical of where The Mandalorian continues, because such a large amount of the fan base is there for Baby Yoda. Like, I have my nieces who are 3, 6, and 9 who want to watch The Mandalorian just to see Baby Yoda. And, you know, there's, I think it broke through so well to their benefit. But once you take him out of that universe, is The Mandalorian able to survive on his own?
I think it still can. And I think that it's not even the character Baby Yoda's fault at that point. You know what I mean? But I think it's literally the fact that it keeps eyeballs to the screen. And that means if you can continue to sling merch while this character is on screen and keep those eyeballs on screen, you can affect the plot that way. You can affect the artistic decisions that are made. And then I guess for me, my precious thing I get caught up on is like, can I genuinely enjoy this without feeling like I'm participating in this, you know, really blatant display of materialism and capitalism?
Right. But that's kind of been the basis of what Star Wars has always been built on, right? It's always been about the toys and the merch and stuff. And
has it? Or is that like something that cropped up around it? And I don't really have the answer to that.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of content out there of George Lucas bragging about how much money he made by retaining the toy rights to Star Wars, and it was the number one, you know, toy in the 70s into the 80s, and you know, even in our childhood, the vast majority of the toys I owned were Star Wars related, and I was always trying to collect more. Whenever I had money or a birthday or something, I was like, I need Mace Windu. I need this. And, you know, my most prized possession I had as a kid was, I had a Republic gunship that was enormous. And no idea how much it would have cost. I'm sure it's in the hundreds of dollars when it first was released, because it was huge. And Jesus, you could fit like 30 toys in it and stuff like that. And all my friends, we all had huge armies of Star Wars toys. So I think that's always been one of the big driving forces of Star Wars, because my household, you know, maybe we bought, you know, each movie $20, maybe we bought $100 worth of DVDs in Star Wars, but the hundreds upon hundreds of dollars in toys and other merchandise is really where the majority of the money is coming in.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where that big debate in like the film discourse online comes in, right? Where a lot of people speak kind of resentfully about things like the Marvel movies or Star Wars, or what they call Disneyfication, where these kind of really profitable film ventures can outcompete any other kind of film, regardless of the artistic merit. Because you can pull all of this into merch, you can pull all of it into sequels, you can make all this integrated content like shows and movies that are sequels to other movies, and then have a character spin off into their own thing. That could be a product of like what happened to the film industry after the 2008 recession, right? But I mean, it's one of those very real things where it's like, we should be able to enjoy more lowbrow entertainment like Star Wars, and yet I don't think other films should have to compete in so unfair terms. You know what I mean? And we'll take it back to Star Wars in a bit, but I just think like this is the kind of interesting discussion that's cropped up in the wake of it.
Yeah, no, I understand that concept, but I think what is these, you know, theme park type series, the main aspect of it is community, right?
Right.
If I go see an Oscar nominated movie in theaters, I don't need to bring my whole crew with me to see it. Where, you know, if I'm going to see Star Wars or Marvel, I'm not going to see those by myself. I, you know, I'm there to, you know, punch my buddies in the arm when certain things happen and stuff like that. Where,
yeah, there is a communal experience to these movies. There is.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been community. I remember just being a child and on G4 TV seeing Comic-Con and seeing all these people wearing Star Wars outfits and stuff, and just as a kid it just makes you feel like you're part of something, you're part of this community, and that's such a powerful force.
It is, and I guess for me I'm kind of just at the point where I do buy that that's a genuine force. Like, I don't think it's cynical to think that people can't have some kind of validating interest in something nerdy, right? But I think with just how profitable geek culture can be, it just gets tricky. And yeah, I think in a world where, you know, things feel a little fake sometimes, It's just nice to know that you can genuinely enjoy something. And I think maybe that's where you kind of have to tune the noise out, tune some of the commercialism out yourself, and just be like, you know what? I'll just watch this with my friends, or I'll watch this with, you know, a loved one, and just, you know, share the memory, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it's just we have to have faith, or, you know, it's hard because I really think Disney is not a good company, and I really wanted to boycott them and not have Disney Plus. And I just thought a lot of things they did in the new series were super horrible to do to, you know, because there were so many different points in the whole trilogy where they kind of teased murdering beloved characters. You know, they, in the last movie, they made you think that Chewbacca got blown up just for the dramatic effect. The Last Jedi, they blew Leia into space just to get a rise out of the fans and stuff like that. And
yeah,
it's very manipulative.
I also feel like there's kind of like a, I don't feel like it was kind of dignified what they did to like the former stars in Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and how am I forgetting Han's name right now?
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, like, I think at a point, like, you know, they did that a long time ago. We never followed up on their stories except in, like, you know, that original extended universe that was like written out of the canon. And it's kind of okay to let that fade into, like, you know, the memory hole of the public consciousness, where they just, you know, look back on it with like rose colored goggles. And then you just bring them, like, kind of lacking grace out of, you know, retirement into this project so you can make like some money out of it, and kill them all off one by one, or in Carrie Fisher's case, literally like try to see how they can milk out the last bits of footage before she dies. It kind of feels dehumanizing in that sense. Like, not only is people's the actual genuine connection they have to Star Wars, or their actual memory of Star Wars, being like taken for granted so they can sell you a new product, but it also just kind of feels like there's no respect for the artists. And if you talk, people talk about, like, you know, Rey's character, Finn's character, or Rose for that matter, I think none of the actors really did anything wrong in how they went about it. I just think that there was such a confused and just kind of bare bones attempt to buy the production team, really, so Disney and co, that they just didn't have good direction and had to just do cringeworthy things on camera. And, you know, they got paid for it, so I guess they can't feel too bad, but at the same time, like, it feels like a further cheapening of Star Wars and a further cheapening of what good it can bring. You know what I mean? Or right. what good yeah, art can bring.
I mean, I really do feel for all of the main characters from that series, because I think all of them had great potential. But I think what happened was, we live in this advanced age where Disney is able to have a lot of data
mm-hmm.
quickly as soon as a movie comes out, and they were trying to react to you know, kind of what they were viewing as the public opinion about stuff. And, you know, what's the lady's name? Carrie Marie Tran, you know, like them
yeah.
just completely sidelining her character, kind of sidelining Finn and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like Return of Skywalker felt like a response to the hate they got for The Last Jedi more than like an actual movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, instead of staying the course, they were just kind of trying to react to kind of these public outcries or just like just the spam they were getting. They just wanted to get rid of all negativity and make it a very middling experience for everyone. So, and they had enough data to be able to react quickly.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up, because this is something that I recall George R. R. Martin saying about the HBO Game of Thrones series, where I'm paraphrasing heavily. If I can find the clip, I might put it in post, but it was him saying that if you were writing a mystery novel and you had the initial plot be that the butler killed the mistress for in this hypothetical story, you would just write it and be done with it. But then because of the internet and how like Benioff and Weiss were like writing it, and because of the way the internet is, they do the show, and then at the parts where I guess I'm not sure what he was saying this in reference to, but I'll just explain his point is they would write one thing, then see how the internet was reacting to it. So, you know, you're setting up the plot to be the butler kills the mistress, but then you see that people on the internet think that the butler didn't do it, the gardener killed the mistress. Then you change the plot halfway through to make it look like the gardener did it after the fact. It just leads to that like whiplash we all had watching Game of Thrones, right? Where it almost seemed like they were right, especially towards the end of the series, they were just writing it in response to whatever Twitter or like the broader public was reacting to about it. And I mean, I guess that's probably what also put an additional stake in the heart of the Star Wars sequels, was the fact that like there was this pool of outrage that happened both before and after each of the sequel films was released, all of it not really mattering in the long run, but they decided to cater to that, either to act in defiance for some inscrutable reason, or, you know, to kowtow to it for whatever inscrutable reason. And it's like trying to like, aside from trying to monopolize and like maximize your profits, what other reason are you doing that for? It kind of just shows that you had no idea what you were doing when you took on this series. You had no real vision for what the sequels were going to look like. And then you just kind of did the three movies and washed your hands of it and be like, "Ooh, we're never doing that again."
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they thought they were giving everybody what they wanted, but in reality, it was just very incoherent because there was just no consistency to it. But if, like, especially watching, you know, episode or The Force Awakens the first time, they were jamming everything in from the original trilogy into like one film. And you could just really tell that they were just really trying to go in with the nostalgia and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I feel like the way they would have justified that is like, oh, in Star Wars, they love making the same reference over and over again. But yeah, there's one thing to pay homage, and it's another thing to just blatantly like copy a plot. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it's just, and to not even be able to get into all the drama that, you know, there's so much speculation on why they were trying to react in the ways they were, but It was bringing in the original cast was such a gamble, and you have so many people that are invested, and there's no real good way to use those characters in a meaningful way that doesn't upset someone.
Absolutely.
And I think the most heartbreaking thing from that the sequels is they took, you know, Luke Skywalker, who for my father's generation was the purest person to ever look up to. He was the absolute, like, ultimate vision of a man.
He was the literary hero for that generation that didn't read books, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And to make him into just like that depressing, you know, mess that he was in those movies, and it was hard to watch. And I know, like, just watching my father's reaction to it is just like, you can just tell.
What do you think?
Like, it just makes no sense, right? And even Mark Hamill at this point will admit, you know, it just, that's not Luke. It doesn't make sense why they didn't explain why he had that arc of just losing everything that was Luke. And maybe if they had more time or something, they might be able to explain it. But why even take that risk, and why add on to this saga, which, you know, there was a reason for this arc of the beginning of Anakin Skywalker, and then contrasting him off of his son. And, you know, Disney must have taken on that sequel series and not taking that into
account. Yeah, because there's some very loose references to, like, those old sequel books. I never read those, but I'm just aware of those.
All the legends that, yeah, I mean, they tried to incorporate a different thing from the legends books and stuff like that, but it's just, I don't know why they felt the need to go and add on to this story that was already being told over such a long format. And it's such a dangerous game to play with all these characters that people are attached to.
Yeah, yeah, it's dangerous to the fans' expectations, but I think it's also just, I think it's very telling of the kind of moment we're in societally, where the idea of enjoying things or the idea of art itself is now questionable in some context. So that's all the depressing stuff I had planned to discuss. Let's let's do a bit of a lightning round here. Overall, what was your favorite movie?
I think Revenge of the Sith will always be the strongest to me, but that I just had such a strong attachment to the Republic era growing up, because, you know, as a kid, all the games I had were Star Wars games in that era. I had all the toys, my brothers were into it and stuff, and I just, such a strong connection.
Like the Battlefront games movie. Or
yeah, Battlefront, Star Wars Republic Commando. There was a lot of content back then. Back then too, the launch game with the Xbox, when you bought an original Xbox, it came with Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Oh, word.
So yeah. So I just spent so much time as a kid in that universe that will always be such a strong connection to me. But I think Rogue One is definitely a much stronger movie, and that's the one I watch the most frequently. But definitely Revenge of the Sith. Do you feel the same way?
I kind of feel exactly the same way. I think I'm going to stick by what I said and say Revenge of the Sith is probably the best one for me, just because of how accidentally good it is, even when it's cringeworthy. I have to go with just Ian McDiarmid just killing it as Sidious. Just absolute. Even if you think it's corny, it's so entertaining.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The power to save the ones you love.
Yeah, I mean,
also, just Evan McGregor. He did such a good dub. It was so underpraised for how well he did that Obi-Wan role, and how little they gave him to work, for that matter.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in I can't wait to see what they do with him in the Obi-Wan series, and hopefully
he
is given the runway to take it where he needs to. But, I mean, while we're talking about beloved Star Wars movies, though, I gotta recommend to anybody the Ewoks, Battle for Endor. That is a amazing movie to watch with your loved ones.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. If you can't get that one, try to find a bootleg 1976 copy. Is that one of the actual made-for-TV Star Wars special? With Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you know, but Disney Plus just released, like, the vintage collection, they call it, which is, like, a lot of really weird Star Wars things that they try to do, which include the two Ewok movies, which
are
very straight to TV-ish. And that's what I'm talking about. The Battle of Endor, it is such a bad movie that it's fun to watch. And it's crazy to see, like, back in the day, they did not care about the universe at all. And they just did weird stuff. And the makeup makes no sense. The Battle of Endor has a literal wizard. She turns into a bird and flies away and casts spells. And it's so bad, but it's so funny. So it's
more like a Dark Crystal type movie?
Yeah, very much. Oh, so. My gosh. When I was in high school, a friend stumbled upon a copy of this. And we were obsessed with it because it's so bad, but it's so funny. Like, the entire movie, you'll just laugh. You'll just laugh. I recently, when they first added it to Disney Plus a couple weeks ago, I was that jerk that spiked it on the TV when I was at my friend's house, and there was four other people that I forced to watch it, and they were laughing so hard because it's the budget was so bad. It ends with a fight inside, like, a medieval castle in England, and it's so obvious. It does not feel like Star Wars at all. And then the whole time, you just have Ewoks that understand English. And they don't explain why they don't understand it in the mainline series. But Wicket, he understands how to speak in English.
Huh.
And it's hilarious.
I can't believe. Okay, I'm gonna make sure I check this out.
Everybody's favorite diabetes guy is in the Ewok movie too, so it's another.
He is. Oh my, diabetes.
Yeah. Diabetes.
Oh dear lord. Yeah.
He's he saves the day.
Oh boy. Well, when you're not going to speak the praises of the Ewoks movie. Of the series, whether they're the animated ones or whether it's one of these newer live-action ones that's... Well, it's only The Mandalorian right now, right? Yeah, it's only The Mandalorian right now. Which one has been your favorite?
Definitely The Clone Wars. I really like how gritty they get with showing the dark side or the darkness among the Jedi, and I just really love that. And I think Ahsoka Tano is such a great character to, like, kind of get her perception on the universe, because she's really so pure that you can see all the stuff that you're just not paying attention to in the universe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Like, I wanted to say The Mandalorian right now, but I think I just have to give credit to The Clone Wars for being the OG in that regard. I did watch, like, that old animated series before Disney bought it out. And I just remember, like, being really fucking frightened of General Grievous in that one. Cause
Original Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, cartoon? Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I was still a kid. Disney Plus also.
Oh, I might have to rewatch it. Cause the feeling of suspense was real, but I don't know if that was just cause I was a kid. But I think the Clone Wars, it gets the idea of Star Wars in that it has to be all things to people, and and because it's like a extended series, you can give multiple characters multiple arcs. But it's not as confused as George Lucas can be at times. So I think, like, it has a coherent vision, yeah. And then I think that's where it can also get tricky with Star Wars. It's like, if one person does have a coherent vision for Star Wars, does it change the flavor? Or is it the fact that the original movies and the original prequel were so confused that they can effectively be all things to all people?
Yeah, I mean, I think you to enjoy the Clone Wars, you have to be able to
Appreciate
just not
how
take it
bad.
seriously. Yeah, and because he does the balancing act that like I think is much more apparent in like traditional animes where like you can have like three episodes of something really gritty and crazy, and then the next episode will be Jar Jar Binks accidentally like blowing something up or like just
Oops,
something
Misa eating a
stupid.
big doo-doo this time.
Yeah, so there's like that palate cleanser of just something really dumb amid like some really intense stuff, and like tonally that doesn't go well together. But I think if you took a couple of the episodes from the Clone Wars that are like super gritty, if that was the entire series, it would probably be too dark for most people to enjoy. You'd probably get
But
depressed.
yeah, and I guess we can jump this into what's the ideal watching order for a new viewer, right? Like, there were essential episodes of the Clone Wars for me that when I was showing my partner Star Wars for the first time, I'm like, we can't skip these. We could
Right.
probably skip a whole season, but we can't skip these ones.
Yeah, I mean the first two seasons are very children focused, and then at some point he must have just gotten the reins and was able to do what he wants. But yeah, I think there's a handful of like arcs in the Clone Wars that are worthwhile or like must watches. And thankfully, like for the most part, you can skip the other stuff without missing much. Because I think, like, with you and Sky, did you watch the Clone Wars animated movie?
We did not. So we tried. She was like, she wanted to watch the whole thing. And I said, listen, it's going to take much longer than you want. You just. Because she started watching The Mandalorian. So she saw the first season and then was like, I have no idea, but I just want to enjoy this. Then watched season two and saw me get all the references. And I think that's where it started the okay, I'm ready to figure everything out. So I'm like, okay, listen, we're gonna abridge it a little bit. We're gonna watch you can decide not to watch the prequels, or we'll start with the prequels. So she's like, okay, all the movies are guaranteed. All the movies. So we start with the
Even the
prequel movie.
animated movie.
Not the animated movie. I forgot about it and I intentionally abridged it because I'm like, listen, we're not it's it doesn't
It's very, very chill, like child focused and
Yeah. Like
cheesy, but
Yeah, so I think we saw the first two movies. So we see Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Then I do like my essential Clone Wars viewing list, which is mainly like, which basically made her like really love the Obi-Wan character. And honestly, Obi-Wan is the highlight of both the prequels and the Clone Wars, in my opinion.
yeah,
He just is a
the
good
just the level of
character.
class he has,
He,
yeah.
yeah, because like he is like, the actual like representative of what a good Jedi is, even though the order is like just hideously decayed at the point in the universe it is.
Right.
So we watch those episodes. We watch Attack of the Clones, and then we watch the final season of Clone Wars that got released last year's. Because it takes place at
So
about the
good.
same time, so that's the order I did it in, is we'll watch Revenge of the Sith and then that last season. Then I just show her for Rebels the just the one episode where Obi-Wan fights and kills Darth Maul. That's the
Yeah,
only episode of
that's
Rebels we
beautiful.
watched.
Okay.
Very sad of me. I feel like I could have included a few more episodes, but I feel like it wasn't essential.
Yeah, there's a lot of good episodes in the clone or in Rebels, but there's a lot more
Kid-focused
just like
stuff,
silly
yeah.
stuff happening. It's not as serious as the Clone Wars. There's random little bits where you're like, wow, this is really intense, but then there's a lot more just like goofing
Yeah.
off in the galaxy.
Yeah, and I feel like they really had the potential to show like just how cruel the Empire is, but they couldn't because it's a kid show. So they just show like
Yeah.
the individual cruelty of certain characters, which is okay enough for a kid's show, but I feel like, you know, if you're and I mean that's the whole thing, that's what we get for trying to watch episodes of a kid's show, right? But I think there was potential to really show what the early rebellion was up against. So right. Then what else? We did watch Rogue One. Rogue One was good. I think it is.
Is Rogue One where you started, though?
That's
not where you started.
That's for in between the prequels and the original trilogy.
Is that like the first? So you went from Mandalorian to.
Well, the
prequels.
So we decided to watch The Mandalorian again for this run. Because now she was like, I want the full story as much as I can. So now that by the time we watch Rogue One, then we watch the original trilogy. Then in between the original trilogy and the Disney trilogy, that's when The Mandalorian happens. So I have the very nice experience of watching Mandalorian season 1 and 2 before having to watch the entirety of the Disney trilogy. And that was the watch order we did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is controversial. I understand.
Yeah. How tempted were you after watching season 2 of Mandalorian to show her the Thrawn episodes of Rebels, though?
I was somewhat. I just don't know how I would get her to care, and I don't know how I would piece the episodes together. Because
yeah.
Thrawn is such a compelling character, but everyone around him isn't.
Right.
So it's to get like one bit of lore, you have to parse through more garbage. And I didn't feel like it was worth getting her hyped up for. But maybe if we get more follow up, then I'll try to find some kind of summary compilation.
Yeah, I think, because there's no like story arc where it's like these 5 episodes in a row, they're dealing with Thrawn. It's kind of, he's like sprinkled throughout the whole last season. So
yeah,
does make it kind of tough.
And again, it's just one of those things where it's like, they were really reaching with Rebels. You know what I mean? It was clearly directed for kids. They put it on Disney XD, which is like it's for fucking like kids above the age of 13. Let's be honest with ourselves.
The cool kids, man.
We are not cool, and we are not kids. We are on a podcast right now. That should tell you everything. But, I think the ploy was, well, we need more of an audience that can buy the merch. So right. we'll put Thrawn in, and that's where the adults with disposable income can like come in and buy the merch, I guess. But it shouldn't have to come down to that, because he's a compelling character, and yet I feel like they wasted it by doing this shtick. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that like, he is literally the only reason I started watching. I started watching that over this last year, and that's the only reason, is I'm like, oh, Thrawn's sprinkled in there, and then you work your way through it, and there's not a lot of juicy content in the Rebel series, but there's some cool stuff, but mostly there for Thrawn and the other characters that they brought back, like Bo-Katan. And
they brought back some of the clones too.
Yep, they brought back Rex, which was cool, but I think I seen like some kind of, you know, maybe like a some kind of meme or something online, and I'm like, wait, Rex comes back? And that also was kind of what drove me to look it up and watch it from the beginning. But I don't think I recommend it to anybody to just watch all of Rebels.
Yeah, I just, there's probably a highlight reel somewhere on YouTube that's like not in HD and is probably like really choppy and like bass boosted for whatever reason. That's still better than like trying to sit down and watch it, in my opinion. Well, okay, yeah. So then what order would you recommend for a new viewer?
I mean, I think my preferred order is start with Rogue One, just because it's the most interesting.
And it's your favorite, so.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's like a really, it's just pretty broadly good to more than just, you know, super science fiction focused people, because it has spaceships and stuff, but it doesn't really get into a lot of the weirder aspects of the Star Wars universe. There's no,
I think it establishes the stakes of like what the rebellion is, who you're fighting against. Yep. It gives us a semblance of like the Empire and its cruelty without really trying to like really obviously paint that the Empire is the Nazis. Cause that's, right. It's an interesting enough concept until you realize that what Disney did in the trilogy was just like try to hammer it home with no context. And that's just shitty storytelling, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think all the movies, though, for the most part, have that same sin of there's no explanation on why the bad guys are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just bad. And I think that's one thing I'll give to Revenge of the Sith is as Anakin is doing these horrible things, he's still trying to justify to the audience that he's doing them for good reasons. He's trying to bring peace and prosperity to the universe. And he thinks by hurting these few people, he can save the broad universe and all that stuff. And I think for me, I like that to be a dynamic. I like to kind of understand why the bad guys are doing what they're doing, but not necessarily be in support of them.
Yeah, yeah, because I like that when Star Wars really excels, like when it can actually be like moderately deep, is when it can show all the different shades of morality in a very complicated universe like that. Because I think that's the appeal of Star Wars, is that it's such a big universe, you could join any, and because it's all things to all people, you as an audience member could see yourself in at least one of the presented situations, right? Mm-hmm. And you probably wouldn't see yourself as, you know, a paragon of virtue in the Jedi Order. You probably wouldn't see yourself as like a cruel mastermind in the Sith. But you could probably see yourself in the Resistance. You could probably see yourself as a bounty hunter. You could probably see yourself as like one of the soldiers or one of the bandits or all of the wretched hive of scum and villain. You could see yourself there and like trying to eke out what you're trying to do. And that's, I think, where Revenge of the Sith thrives, is that, you know, Palpatine is evil. Palpatine's conniving, but it doesn't matter why he's there. It matters that he can corrupt people with potential, even the Chosen One. And when you can't like explain why the bad guys are bad, if you can at least show like the most evil thing they can do in a way that like keeps the audience like engaged, then at least you've done something right. But I think when you just like try to make like a one-for-one like comparison, like, well, they're all in matching suits, they all have the red flags, they all have the guns, they're doing violence, to whom and why they're doing it is never explained, and then there's just like wanton there's cruelty, or there's no cruelty, we just see them like talking angrily to each other, then it's not as compelling. Whereas, you know, if you can at least see in the original trilogy, like, even though it's also shittily done there, you can see the different shades of it. Like, Obi-Wan is probably this really good guy, but he's a failure in that he couldn't stop the rise of the Empire. You have Han, who is just trying to survive. You've got Luke, who catches himself in a tragic situation, but up to that point was just like a young person trying to find their way in the world. You know, you at least can project or share through your story that kind of depth of morality, or how gray morality can be. And when you don't, it lands flatter. Which I mean, this is such a big digression. I think we were talking about how in Rebels they never explain how the bad guys are bad. Yeah, I like that, but that's why I like Clone Wars, because like they show you one of the separatist occupied worlds, like when they what was it, the invasion of Ryloth?
Which one is Ryloth? Not where the Twi'leks
live? No, that is where the Twi'leks are. Yeah, yeah. If you remember that arc. Where it's like you get what it was, is that they were like basically kicking people out of the cities, holding people hostage, looting the planet for like its treasure and natural resources. I think that's where the Clone Wars excels, because you can actually paint a picture of to what end power is being deployed and why those guys are bad.
Right.
That makes for more compelling science fiction, in my opinion, at least.
No, I agree. And you still have to present some kind of structure of how this problem can be, you know, confronted, where I think in the newer series is they never really set up like a good structure of what I don't even know what they're called. The First Order? The Last
Order? Yeah, the First Order. They call it the Last Order in the last movie.
Yeah. But they just really mean, and then they have this gun that can blow up entire solar systems. And I took that scene very personally in the Force Awakens, because I took it very symbolically of they fired the cannon, they blew up Coruscant, and by that they...
But it wasn't even Coruscant, it was a different planet, and they didn't even tell us.
Yeah, I think, but yeah, they didn't really explain what it was, but when I watched it the first time, I'm like, did they just destroy prequel series? I'm like, okay, like, I just thought they were just wiping everything out at once, and you didn't really know who the good guys were, the bad guys were, and also it kind of felt like, oh, you wasted like the original character's time, because Leia's still doing the same thing she's doing.
Right.
She's had multiple victories, and you think that she was working towards something, but she's still on the same hustle.
Yeah. Okay. I really did digress us from our original topic. So after you get people to watch Rogue One, then what comes next?
I tried to use my charm and passion to start with from the beginning of Episode One, The Phantom Menace.
Okay.
But The Phantom Menace is very hard to get through, and I understand that, and I feel that way. But at least as like a strong connection to Darth Maul, you're like, you get something out of this movie.
Yeah, you get Evan McGregor. You get that much. That you get that final fight between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul, and honestly, that's probably the best part of it. So at least you end on a good note, but we went in with the expectation it was going to be bad. We didn't realize it was going to be that bad. We definitely saw, again, just once you realize that, oh no, the Gungans are all Jamaican. Oh no. Who are the green guys that are doing the trade blockade?
Federation?
What's their species name again? I forgot. Gunray, and they were all supposed to be Asian.
Yeah.
And Watto is like just this really like Jewish stereotype. I'm like, yikes.
It's all about the credits. Okay.
I'm just like, oh, this is just bad.
Yeah. And
it's bad in a way Disney couldn't make it, but what were they trying to accomplish? I don't get it.
I have no idea. And thankfully, I think they realized a lot of the places they messed up. And as you watch further, you can see how like Episode Three, like Jar Jar Binks is just in the background in a lot of scenes, and they went out of their way to make sure he does not open his mouth. And
which again is another case of me feeling bad for the actor, because did you know like the guy was almost driven to suicide who played Jar Jar?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some interviews on it, just like the young Anakin actor and
Jesus,
how his life turned. And the Star Wars fandom has a capability of ruining people's lives, which is sad, because it's a silly thing in the end of the day. But
well, I mean, I think it just goes to the show that like these are people who love their product so much that they're willing to forget that there's people involved in the actual production of it. And are just like, well, why'd you make it bad? I mean, it has the same kind of depersonalized and alienated observation to it, where like you know, if you've ever seen like those videos of people like freaking out at like restaurant workers online, and you're just like, what compels someone to act like that? I guess it's probably the same kind of shit with the toxic fandom, so to speak. Yeah, just if you are going to sit through episode one, do your best. You know, don't tell anyone, but take an edible. Do a little drinking game. You know, have fun with it. Have fun with it. No one's expecting you to think it's a good movie. And then and then directly you follow up with Attack of the Clones?
Yep, I would say. Right into Attack of the Clones. And then probably Revenge of the Sith. I've never really had the opportunity to show anybody any of like the Clone Wars series stuff. I think the only thing I've ever convinced people to watch is just the Siege of Mandalore.
Uh-huh.
Just because
that is the best part, honestly.
Yeah. But then they're all like, wait, Darth Maul's still alive? And you're like, yeah. I mean, if you want to watch all this other stuff, you can understand how and why and what he's been up to. And then everybody's like, no, thank you. But
yeah, honestly, I think especially if you're showing it to someone who's only been introduced through The Mandalorian, I think if all you do is just the Siege of Mandalore followed by the last four episodes with Ahsoka, and then cut into Revenge of the Sith, I think that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then kind of stick with the movies through then, or past that point. I've never rewatched any of the Disney trilogy, though. So I've never shown anybody the Disney trilogy,
mm-hmm.
and I've just had no interest in rewatching it.
So pretty much you would just say, like, end with Return of the Jedi and then The Mandalorian after that if you want, and then just cut it there.
Yeah, I mean, I have said I will watch these with you. I just have no interest in these, and maybe they will be interesting to you, because I mean, I know people that find them interesting, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I would love to see more stories told in that time period with some of the characters. Like, I think Rey and Finn have a lot
it's of just squandered characters. That's what I think about it, is just when I look at it, it feels like a squandered opportunity that I think they had everything they needed. I think they had people who understood the aesthetic of Star Wars. I think they had people who were good casting calls. They even had the original cast to cooperate. I don't think that was a good idea, but they had it on hand. And they just fumbled it. They just fucking fumbled it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just, yeah, I just had no, I just did not care about the foe, the First Order. It just really made me feel like they
were like
just dragging out the Empire, because they had the same uniforms, essentially, and they just...
Well, it's an interesting idea that, like, what if, like, a couple of... you know, people aren't happy with the post-imperial order and decide to bring it back. It's an interesting enough concept on its head, but like for them to come back in the way they did and just like, we're the bad guys now, and not have any understanding of what their plans are and what they intend to do aside from just looking imposing. I don't care about fighting them as much as I do, the Empire, because you can at least like point back to the Empire and be like, well, yeah, they were doing all this bad stuff on other planets, and they killed you know, Luke's family, so he has a personal reason to go after them.
I mean, they don't give the characters good justifications, I think, at least in the beginning, on why they're doing what they're doing. You know, Rey is not as motivated by Luke. She's just kind of going with the flow. Like you said, Luke had the motivation of his family was murdered. He has no other choice, really. He has to go on this adventure.
Yeah, and also, like, the whole assessment, especially, like, by more reactionary elements in the fandom, is that, oh, Rey is a Mary Sue. I don't think that's necessarily fair so much as it is like an improper way to frame it. It's more so that like the thing about what makes a Star Wars, like a successful Star Wars plot, compelling is that the hero comes out of nowhere and is kind of led in whatever direction they need to save the day at the end of the day, right? So in the same way, Anakin's the chosen one just because he is. Luke is the one who's going to bring balance to the Force just because he is. That's what makes right. Luke a Mary Sue in that regard, too. That's what makes Anakin a bit of a Mary Sue in that regard, too. So I don't really think it's fair to look at it that way. I think it's more of, well, you have this understanding that the character is supposed to come from nowhere, but you've provided very little of a compelling reason for why they need to act in that way. You know what I mean? Like, you get the thing that, like, yeah, they're, you know, forced to escape Jakku. And then there's that thing where, okay, Kylo Ren kills Han Solo. So then she has, like, a reason to fight back. But it feels opportunistic because it's like, yeah, it's probably fucked up if you had to watch that as, like, someone who met Han Solo the first time. But it's more compelling to you because you know who Harrison Ford is than it is for this character we just met. And you're trying to, like, pass off my inferred experience as a viewer to the character who I don't fully understand everything about. And right. That's where if they didn't do this big plot twist, because I don't know if this was ever the plan that they were going to make her Palpatine's granddaughter at the end of the day. But yeah. If they just gave her a story, like a little bit of a story heads up, could have saved it, maybe.
Yeah, I desperately wanted to have background story on who Rey and Finn are. And, you know, they spend so much time teasing it, like who Rey is. But is it good storytelling to wait multiple movies to give you any kind of background to the character and why they are in the situation they are and stuff like that, of her being left by her parents and stuff like that? They're, knowing that she was abandoned by her parents when you're already three movies in is kind of not... I don't think it's a super helpful way.
Well, yeah, and for the payoff to be done that way, it just feels like very shoehorned. And then even with Finn, I feel like they botch it because they have this nice arc for him of he's, you know, kidnapped as a child, forced to be this new kind of stormtrooper, and then redeems himself, you know, picking up Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber and trying to fight like a new Sith Lord. Do you know what I mean? And then they just butcher it again. You but have also, like a redemption arc set up.
Yeah, they also don't do him a good service though with like the gags of saying he was a literal janitor and stuff like that though. Of Finn, like that's the only background we have in this character who's supposed to be like super amazing. Is they're like, how do you know this information? He's like, oh, I was a janitor. And you know that's okay and stuff like that, but. You're setting up these protagonists that are supposed to carry a series, but you're
You doing cheapen these things their that importance every time. You know what I mean? You just cheapen it with jokes in a way that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would love for Finn to have been like this character that was like struggling with, you know, having been in all these terrible situations and stuff like that. But when you say he's a janitor, it makes it seem like the first time we met him was his first time actually in the action, and he immediately realized it was wrong. The first time he was doing it,
like it's still compelling enough, and then you still just, you know, and I think again with like the kind of really reactionary and toxic reaction to like, oh, there's a black lead and there's a female lead, I think like people see that we all had the common experience like, okay, these movies are bad, and then people like just are chalking up the fact that it's bad to the Force diversity that they claim to have an issue with. And it's like, no, that's not the reason it's bad. It's bad because it's a cash grab and they don't know how to write these characters. And then they want to claim, you know, Disney would like to claim that like, oh, we're progressive and we put all this representation in the new Star Wars movies. And it's like, well, I feel like you guys did some damage here because you just like ruined these characters. You didn't give these, you know, talented actors something to work with. And then now you have like this really reactionary segment of people saying, well, it's the diversity of movies that's making everything bad these days. And like, to a dumbass who like hears multiple opinions thinking, well, if a lot of people are saying it, it's probably true. You've done more damage than good, Disney. I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of it is also just the reliance on like the original cast and stuff that kind of stole the show from these characters, you know? Because you have them both standing next to Han Solo, who you have loved for all these years, and he's this enormous character, and he's kind of phoning
it in.
Them.
My man was phoning it in the entire
Yeah, he
time.
Was. He did not want to be in that movie.
Oh, he showed up taking an edible. He was just like, okay, what you need?
Like... it's true. All of it. Okay. Thank you, Han Solo. That's nice.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and he was a pretty dramatic contrast to them when they're all super wide-eyed and excited about this adventure they're on, and then Harrison Ford is super grumpy that entire movie.
Oh, boy. Well, I did... Let's go back to our lightning round, because I did have another question.
Okay.
Favorite character?
Favorite character... I think, like we discussed earlier, Ahsoka Tano is definitely the most compelling narrator to kind of view through her perspective. But... also, just for like coolness, I want to say Kit Fisto is always going to be amazing to me.
There's always those characters who like we knew nothing about until like those little expansion series came in. It's just like, yep. Oh, the frog guy, he's cool.
Yep. Kit Fisto was the first Star Wars action figure I had from Attack of the Clones. And I don't know what was about him, but I was like, this guy is...
It was because in both the animated series, he's like this surfer dude. He's like the surfer Jedi, you know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to be dreads, and he's like, yeah, I'm on me here to fight the Sith or whatever. Like, they literally did shit. Like, I'm not making that up.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And then they murdered my boy without even getting a slice in against Palpatine. He just kind of stands there and gets...
A Jedi Master gets sliced up in what? How?
Force-screen, baby. Force-screen.
God damn it.
They retconned it with a book. He force-screamed. Paralyzes weaker minds.
I get that, but there's no explanation of what's going on. It's just Palpatine, like, jumps, does a 720 jump.
And just three people fall pretty
three
much.
People, well, two fall. People fall.
Two people fall immediately, and the next guy takes like three or two slices and is done.
I thought it's like
it was really bad choreography.
Really bad, yeah.
Like how quickly can we get this boy to fight Samuel Jackson? Let's do it.
Oh gosh, I guess my favorite character. I always have weird favorite characters. I think I would say Din Djarin, the Mandalorian himself, is like my favorite character right now.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
I think simply because like we all wanted a bounty hunter lead, and everyone's like, ooh, Boba Fett, but he was just a guy in the background. We never really understood what he was about, and then to actually see like, oh, okay, these guys are killers and, like, pretty lethal in their methods. And you have this guy also, like, strictly bound to a code of honor. And he has, like, a backstory that's simple enough that he hates droids. He was a survivor of the Clone Wars, became a foundling, and now has to do the same thing, basically, with the child, Grogu, as we now find out. It's a compelling enough story that, you know, you can get away with not having to fill in all the details. So he's a pretty complete, pretty cool character just from the surface.
Right. And he doesn't really do anything that makes you feel like a bad person supporting him, right? Everything he does is very justified.
Not just that, but I think, like, because he is literally in, a complex situation of his own that... Not only does he have to, like, protect a child that everyone wants to kill or kidnap at all points, but also like him realizing that he has to positively influence this child because it has a lot of power and he doesn't want anything bad to happen to him. Like he's trying to like prevent himself from developing feelings. And yet I think it's, you know, this is just me gushing, I guess, but it's this idea that like protecting other living beings is like a sacred thing to do. There's like that little spiritual element of Star Wars that they always never really cleanly say. Like, we're supposed to have the idea that the Jedi Order is supposed to be like parallel to like Buddhist monks or whatever. And that, you know, the light side of the Force is like, especially like how it portrays to some spiritual ideas, it's this unity of life type deal, right? If you take all those concepts together, then yeah, him protecting the child is him protecting the future. And that's a cool enough motif to play with. It's a cool enough plot line that you can do without getting too deep into. So I think he's probably one of the best characters we've had in a while. I would say Ahsoka too. She is a good set of eyes to view that world through. I think Obi-Wan is my next favorite, if not Din Djarin. Just because the dad jokes, the punchlines, the beard, another happy landing. Hello there. Just iconic lines.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And yeah, I think a lot of characters, if you give them that kind of treatment, like maybe when we have the Obi-Wan series and he's able to have, you know, 5-6 hours where we just get to be with him and like really get a feeling for, you know, how he just exists, I think it allows you to get a lot more attached to the character.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got two more questions, so let's really get into these. Dark side or light side? Would you even be a Force user if you were in the Star Wars world?
Would I be a Force user? I mean, on paper, oh man, I don't know. The thing is, you spend so much time seeing how both can go wrong, but if you look at either of them enough, you can see how they both can create positivity.
How does the dark side create positivity?
I mean, the whole concept, you know, there was points in time in where the universe was run by Sith and
they were able to keep order on certain planets.
They were able to keep order where you're able to see, you know, the Jedi and the Republic. Maybe it's not completely their fault, but they still allowed the universe to go to Galactic Civil War, where just there was mass genocide happening throughout the universe under their watch.
Mm.
And, you know, I remember one scene in the Clone Wars series where Padme goes to like her friend who is on one of these planets where they're part of the Confederacy.
Oh no, she was part of the Confederate Parliament, which is also just funny that like the Senate, right. They literally made it look like London for whatever reason.
Yeah, but I mean, you still see these people in the universe that see the Jedi in this evil light that you see the Sith through most of the time.
Right, right. And I mean, that goes back to like the, if you're not one of the Jedi or one of the Sith, you live in a much more morally gray universe.
Right. Yeah. And I think that makes it very hard to pick. And I think even, you know, Vader, Anakin thinks that he is creating good. And even in the Rebel series where he's been Vader for many years at that point, he's done some stuff, some really bad stuff. And he runs into Ahsoka and he still tries to convince her that, you know, he can protect her and, you know, he wants to protect this person. So he still thinks he's doing good, right? It's just, right. You know, the Jedi are more hands offish where, you know, they kind of let a lot of things play out, even if it includes people killing each other, where the Sith use Force to kind of bring about a false safety or, you know, And I mean, maybe in the Acolyte TV show, they will expand upon maybe the Sith did do some good things throughout time.
Yeah, possibly, because like there's that idea that you can be like a bit of a naive initiate like Anakin was, where you can use the immense power of the dark side to bring order to things that don't make sense to you. Or you can be like Darth Maul and just do wanton cruelty.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. I think I would say I'd be more of a gray Jedi like Ahsoka. She's still in this middle ground, but she's still also trying to bring about positivity with her power. She still has all these skills, and she's trying to help the universe with mm-hmm. them, but she's not really politically aligned with anyone.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it sucks that the dark side gets Force Lightning.
I know.
They just have better Force powers. Like, okay, the Jedi mind trick's cool enough. Animal friendship, gotta love it. And of course, you know, the Force pull and push. But the Force Lightning was probably one of the coolest things, because you see Dark Sidious and Darth Sidious, God. And he's just, you know, this frail old man. He's just creepy looking. And you're like, what can he do that has everyone like afraid of him? And it's not only that he's conniving, it's like he could probably deep fry you with electricity. You know what I mean? Like it's pretty imposing. That sight of him like just shocking someone to death and then like doing his like signature laugh. But then I think like the reality of the dark side, where like it transforms the body and the mind, where like Darth Maul is literally insane and always losing body parts. Darth Vader literally becomes a machine instead of a man. I mean, Darth Sidious, we can see like once the electricity is back on him, you see his true form, where he's just like wrinkled and aged and decrepit. You know what I mean? And the Jedi have at least that semi-graceful thing of, well, they can show up as themselves in death.
Yeah.
As a Force ghost.
But Kylo never really is morphed by being a Sith, though.
Yeah, I think that's another thing they kind of fuck up, is like, they try to do this ham-fisted job of him being conflicted all the fucking time, but I think each Sith we see, even Anakin Skywalker, right, is that they fucking come to terms with their insecurity or their doubt, and they give in to those dark emotions of hate. They're transformed by their hate, quite literally.
Hmm.
And that's what makes them compelling, is the fact that like they're far too gone and need to be stopped. Which is why, like, when Obi-Wan has to fight Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, it's all the more tragic, because he's prepared to do what it takes. And that's why it's all the more sad for him. It's not that, like, he can be confused and cry about it. It's like, oh, this guy's fucking gone. Then you are lost. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. I think...
It's just a hypothetical. We're just having fun here.
Yeah. I just want to believe that somewhere out there the Sith are doing good things, right?
I think like with the extended universe, like the, what is it, Knights of the Old Republic games, there were still like members of the Sith Council who like didn't like the Sith Empire, or were kind of the mind of, nah, we can go off and do our own thing, or more of like, I should be allowed to do use the dark side to do the good things that I want because I'm driven by passion or shit like that, right? And I think it's just the maturity of the storyteller and the maturity of the person who comes up with the story to determine how to do that, because you can really fuck up the allegory there. Because if you want to make it such that the dark side is the bad guys, you can do it, but their power literally comes from giving into your base instinct, giving into your id, and the consequences that come of it and coming to terms with it. And the Jedi are like kind of like the superego, where it's this very regulated set of rules and promises you make to yourself, and you know you can intentionally break them and be a hypocrite, and that's your cross to bear, or you're just hamstrung by the promises you make, and you can't act in the just way that you claim you will. So they're both, like, you know, interesting ideas for Star Wars, and I think that a lot of the junk I tend to watch, including Star Wars, is, like, I watch it because I see potential in it, and even though, like, it never pans out the way I would like it to, I like my headcanon so much I'll continue to watch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that actually leads into my final question for our first Star Wars special. If you had the chance to create any bit of Star Wars content, what would you do and what would you want it to be about?
Yeah, I think based on some of the content that, you know, is coming out in the next year or so, they're really getting into the things I want to see. So with the Acolyte,
Assuming you don't care about any of it,
right?
Or assuming that you could overwrite the history too, what would you do?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, there's time periods where I want to see the transitions of the power. Mm-hmm. So with the Bad Batch, I think I'm finally going to get the chance to see the immediate of Order 66 and see kind of how everybody's scurrying during this very uncertain time. Where that's always been at, like, kind of the top of my list of what time period I want to see. I really want to see maybe take, like, a Kanan Jarrus from the Rebels and, like, watch his immediate, you know, reactions to, you know, the fall of the Order. And because
right, because in the Fallen Order video game, doesn't it start with, like, one of the Padawans, like, literally escaping Order 66?
No, Fallen Order, it takes place, like, years after. Like, oh, I don't remember how many years, but, like, it's, like, 10 years or something. He's on, like, this scrapyard. He's just, like, doing, like, this super low, like, level labor just to kind of hide. So I want to see even a little bit earlier to that, because he has kind of gone through this really dark period and is just kind of to the point where he's hiding out, where I want to see the mindset of this huge Jedi Order existed.
Right.
It ran the entire universe. There was this strict, you know, structure to the universe where everything changes immediately. You know, I'm sure it's not night and day that, you know, the Empire just exists and they have Star Destroyers and there's going to be a lot of really awkward time where I'm sure there's a lot of planets that don't agree with this, and, you know, everybody's kind of in chaos mode. So I'd like to see a story about, like, a Jedi that survived and their immediate, like, way that they survived through that struggle.
That's actually a pretty cool idea of it, because even I think that was one of the endings you could get for what was that old Star Wars game, The Force Unleashed, where you get to play as, like, someone who ends up being Darth Vader's apprentice. And one of the endings is that you try to kill him and you fail, but you end up, like, setting up what ends up becoming the rebellion in the future. I think that's one of the endings. Like, it's always one of those potential avenues in a Star Wars story that I think is good, is, like, what happened if you were a Jedi who had managed to escape Order 66. Right. And because of that whole scene in Revenge of the Sith where they're like, well, we're all not going to talk to each other anymore, I think that psychological experience of being the last of your kind that you know of, or being, like, you know, this hunted vestige of, like, what used to be a societal institution for you.
Yeah.
And the promises that you made still have to be kept. That is a compelling thing for a story. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, anybody that they have a lot of different traumas, and they kind of touch upon it in the Jedi Fallen Order of just like, this kid was literally in a war. His master was like this general that was leading all these battles and stuff like that. And so his whole life had been struggles. And I think it'd be interesting to see like Kanan Jarrus or something, because, you know, when you meet him in the Rebels, like he has like lost all hope in the world and stuff, where it'd be interesting to see like the flow of being this Jedi, this superior being in the universe that's saving everything. But, you know, you have to come to grips with, you know, if the Jedi were that great, how would they have fallen?
That's compelling. So, I think that that would be a compelling future property if you could ever make it. My idea isn't really that convincing, unfortunately. I think I, like you, I really like the Rogue One style movies. I think if there was a kind of bounty hunter who went rogue plot, kind of like how The Mandalorian started off, but he fails in the end of the movie, I think that would be like a compelling plot. So like probably, I don't know. It could be something like a bit of a deep state plot where a bounty hunter finds out what the Empire is up to. He finds out about the plan to dissolve the Senate, how they're going to crack down on like dissidents and shit like that. And maybe like, you know, he helps like set up the rebellion, but dies in the process. That would also be a cool plot. And I mean, that's the cool thing about Star Wars is you can come up with so many headcanons because you want to picture yourself in it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would love anything new that gives me a different perspective on, you know, something that we've only viewed in one perspective so far. So, and I think Rogue One, they had a lot of really cool characters. You know, they weren't Jedi, they weren't Sith. They were just like all these troubled people that have really struggled with, you know, some really difficult things that they've had to do to survive. And, you know, maybe we'll see more of that with the Andor TV show, because we meet Andor and he's just really a horrible person. And, you know, there's probably some compelling reasons why he was.
He's a class one, tier one operator. Yeah, I think that's where the Mandalorian thrives. And I think that's where the Clone Wars and any future Filoni project is probably going to thrive, is if you can show the moral gray area that these characters are in this vast universe that doesn't really seem to care about them and are always up against foes that are more powerful, and still they manage to like fly by the skin of their teeth. That's probably a compelling space to keep this thing going. Or maybe it'll end someday. Who knows? But any closing thoughts as we celebrate May the 4th?
Well, all I have is I just hope that we all can celebrate it to the fullest, and, you know, hopefully the Bad Batch is like a really good little treat for May the 4th. Is there a certain way that you think you are going to celebrate the 4th?
Well, I mean, it's my anniversary today, so I got to focus on that too, but...
Oh, yeah, that's true, you don't.
I guess it's just worth considering what Star Wars means to you in terms of your humanity, as opposed to the merch you can collect or the surrounding discourse and noise around it. I think if you can point to the memories you have of enjoying something genuinely, you know, your loved ones enjoying something with you, and maybe this, you know, those themes of like fighting back against injustice and, you know, being a hero and all that shit, I think that's okay. I think it's a, you know, it's a nice to just have something to enjoy. And it sucks that it's left up to market forces. But at the same time, it's something fun. It's fun, right? It's fun for the whole family, folks. Folks, we love it.
We absolutely love it.
We love it, folks. We love the Star Wars. We love it. All right. Thanks again for coming on, Eddie.
Thanks for having me.
Anything you want to plug before I close out?
No.
All right. Thanks again, dear listener, for tuning into Greenhouse Gaslighting. Feel free to email or DM us on our social medias and reach out to us about any future ideas you might have for content. As always, this is Adi signing off, and may the Force be with you.